Welcome back to Midday on WSVA. We are pleased to have with us in studio now Dr. Mike Biesing, and he is the MBA program director at the College of Business at JMU. And some congrats go to Dr. Biesing and his colleagues, because just this past week, James Madison University's online MBA program was rated number 9 in the country, number 1 in the Commonwealth, and it has jumped, let's see, I believe it was in the 30s or 40s, Mike, prior to that. And in 1 year, that's a rather remarkable jump. Congratulations.
Well, thank you, Jim, and thank you for having us here this morning. And I would say that the bulk of the thanks goes to my colleagues, the faculty who teach in the program, and the students and the administration who help us. We were number 49 last year, so we made a great jump. I don't think, it wasn't a big surprise to us, I guess. I knew that we were really getting some things in place to do some great things with the program. We put a lot of money into our faculty, into the training. One of the things that the survey looks at is, how qualified are your faculty? So we put doctorally qualified faculty in the classroom. We also invest some money in the faculty for training to deliver in an online format, because it's very different from teaching face-to-face.
I was going to ask you about that, because it is obvious that it's a trend that is moving in that particular direction. Online, long-distance learning, these are all things that can provide tremendous cost savings, not only for colleges, but we're starting to see it even trickle down into local schools, where within their own school system, if they've got a specialty program, let's say, where they've only got a half dozen or so kids who want to take that particular program, it's a little difficult to justify, obviously, appointing someone full-time to do that. But if you can bring those kids together in a classroom, six or seven kids in one school, six or seven kids in another, four, five, six, all of a sudden you got 25 or 30 kids that instructor is working to online. All of a sudden you can bring a program right into even rural areas where years ago they just didn't have that opportunity.
That's right. It has far-reaching effects. And I will say that there are some schools doing it really well and some schools who maybe shouldn't be doing it at all. So I think to jump into that without training, that's a bad idea. We've been doing this since 2000 in an online format, and I will say that we were not probably great at doing this when we first started. So if you have the time, you can reach a pretty good point.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but one of the things that you were credited with the overall review of this program was the way in which the program is structured, and also the very strong interactive nature with the students and with the people involved in the program. It's one thing to just toss a program on, put it online and say, here you go, kids, good luck, read pages 60, whatever, through that. And as you know, I think one of the things that kids really get out of, particularly when it gets to college, is that interactive element, because you're working with people like yourself and other folks who have experiences, and more than just the stuff you read in textbooks or more than just the questions you answer on a test.
I think that's a great point. I think our students learn as much from their student colleagues as they do from the instructor in the classroom. If you look, we have a lot of people from the government in our program, so in a lot of government contractors, Booz Allen Hamilton, we get some IBM people, we've had CIA, FBI. So you bring to the table a lot of experience just in your student cohort, and then the faculty member sort of facilitates this learning. And another great point is we do everything in a synchronous format where it's face-to-face, it's live. That technology has gotten a lot better in the last few years. There are some schools, and we've toyed around with the idea, you can get a lot of mileage out of recording a lecture and putting it out there. That's not the way we handle it, and I don't think that's really a best practice.
Yeah, you look at it, it's something we deal with in this industry, and it's podcasts and different things like that, that it is great to a certain degree that you can access that whenever you want at 3 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday. But we still find that more people do what they're doing right now, and that is turn the radio on and listen to it. And that's the same is true for a lot of forms of media. There are other people who are restricted because of their schedules or other things that they're trying to coordinate, you know, or just living their lives to a degree. But it doesn't seem to have the same impact, does it, of when you're sitting there and you are interacting with folks and you're getting not only that feedback from that instructor, that professor who you're working with, but also from the other folks who are involved in this class. And, you know, that to me is that big issue of getting that full college experience, you know, because otherwise there's a lot of this stuff we could do in these remote forms. But I'm not sure that the folks who are supposed to benefit from it would benefit from it, and that's the kids.
Sure. We do one thing. We do record the lectures. So, you know, if we have a student who's traveling overseas and there is this time difference or if they have other obligations, they are able to go ahead and catch up, you know, with a lecture after the fact. So that's nice, but we don't rely on that type of thing.
We're talking this morning with Dr. Michael Biesing. He is the MBA director at JMU, the James Madison College of Business Information Security. MBA program has been ranked number 9 in the nation for online graduate business programs by U.S. News and World Report. Also, it is now number 1 in the Commonwealth of Virginia. We'll have more with Dr. Biesing right if we pause for these words. You're listening to Midday here on WSVA. Welcome back to Midday on WSVA. Joining me in studio is Dr. Mike Biesing. He is the MBA program director for James Madison University in the College of Business and that College of Business. The JMU College of Business Information Security MBA program has been ranked 9th in the country for online graduate business programs by U.S. News and World Report. JMU jumped from number 49 to number 9 in 1 year, and that's obviously a tremendous accomplishment, and number 1 here in the Commonwealth of Virginia. And Mike, I know a lot of this stuff, and I probably have a little more exposure to it because my son got a degree in this particular area. He now is working up in Northern Virginia, has a federal contract, and information security seemingly has become the way of the world. There was a Bond movie a few years ago where the bad guy didn't have guns, he didn't have bullets, he had information. And that's the way it appears the world is going to go, and it's very timely right now. We were talking during the commercial break with the situation that developed at Target. Now we found out Neiman Marcus, and apparently there are more retailers who may have been hacked and personal information was taken. So you've got a bunch of folks who are dealing with that. Is this going to be the biggest area that I don't care if you don't do anything online at all, you've got to protect your information, either your proprietary information, or obviously you've got to allow your customers to know that they can do business with you in a secure fashion, or you ain't going to stay in business long in this age, are you?
No, we talk about order qualifiers and order winners, and certainly this is an order qualifier. If you don't have the security, you're not going to be in business very long. And you think, you know, we become more and more dependent with commerce, finance, you know, medicine, energy, on information flow, and so we absolutely have to keep that secure.
Well, not only that, but we're getting ready, and I forget what the time period is, but I understand as far as medical records are concerned, we're getting ready to see a major new change. We're talking about with the folks at Blue Ridge Community College, they're offering a couple of different encoding because the way in which medical records are encoded is going to change very dramatically, going to an entire digital format. That was one of the big elements of healthcare reform. That was going to be one of the big changes that was going to dramatically reduce the cost of healthcare so that these walls of paper files that you see when you go to your doctor or other specialist, you know, were going to disappear and your information could be portable with you. But if you can't protect that information, and we've already seen that with some of the issues that the healthcare.gov website had when it initially signed on, I mean, that's a lot of very personal information being laid out there. And boy, before you hit that button and hit send, you got to feel secure that only the people who are going to have access to that are the people who are going to have access to that.
Sure. And then you see the, if you read a little bit about what are the big things in the future, the whole BYOD, bring your own device, that's huge. And you look at your...
Kind of explain that for folks who may not understand what you're talking about.
Well, people who maybe bring an iPad to work, to the workplace, and they tap into the, in a legitimate way, they tap into the network, and they're doing business.
At their place of business
usual.
Or something.
Yeah, and they're doing things, job-related tasks during the day. Well, that's going to be the next big, you know, security issue is how do we know the information that's being communicated back and forth between my personal device and my employer's network, you know, how is that being made secure?
Right.
And how do we keep it secure?
I know a lot of businesses will simply not allow that because they are just so scared of what you're going to introduce when you bring that personal device, is at least if you're using whatever's been assigned to you. And I know there are certain stuff where there's encryption involved and other things like that if you're going to introduce it into the network, you know, and just grabbing your whatever it is, firing it up and tapping in. Explain to the folks how that can just open up this portal to Lord knows how much stuff. How could you protect that? That to me seems like, and you talk about the next great challenge, that to me seems like the next huge challenge of being able to protect that network and still give folks that type of flexibility.
Right. I think that is, you want to make people's jobs easier, that you want them to be able to do their job and you want them to be able to bring these devices to work. But we're not sure probably at this point, you know, are we actually keeping things secure? And we'll probably learn another big lesson when something is breached.
For those of us who don't really understand how this stuff all works, we have to operate on faith. And, you know, when we look for these little symbols, if you're buying something, that it is a secure website or something else. And I guess the thing that kind of concerns a lot of folks, the layman out here, are that the guys who are doing the hacking seem to be one or two steps always ahead of the guys and gals who are trying to either catch them or stop them. What's the great motivation? I mean, is it? I was talking about this on the air the other day, and I used the old John Dillinger line. Why do you rob banks? Because that's where the money is. Is that the same motivation for these hackers, that there's all of this money out there if they can find a way to get their hands on it?
I think it's that. It's partially motivated by money, and then you have people, you know, I'll just call them terrorists, who are looking to disrupt service. They're looking to do something to our power grid, you know. So it's money and other motivating factors, and maybe there's a little bit of fame involved if you can take down someone's system. Mm-hmm. You can't keep something 100% secure. We've determined that's impossible because they are always kind of two steps ahead. How do you react after the fact? You know, computer forensics is one of the courses we teach. So it's how do you figure out what went wrong and making sure that never happens again?
And how do you build in those safeguards so that if you do detect it's happening, it doesn't reach the level it did at, say, like a Target? You know, obviously there had to be some systems or safeguards built into their system that should have started firing off red flags everywhere when this started to happen, but yet it didn't, and it wasn't detected until months later.
Sure. And also I think they're just now sort of realizing how many people were affected. I read an article the other day. It said, you know, it's up to like 70 million people. Well, that's a whole bunch of people being affected by, and it could be something as simple as, you know, their email address was leaked. But you can do a whole lot with someone's email address too. The credit card end of it is the part that's fairly disturbing.
Right. And that gives you certain accesses. Then when you get that information, it's like Social Security numbers, you know, that are gold. And the thing that amazes me all the time is, when the government finally catches up or something, is they show these huge websites where all this information is just there. You know, these folks get it. They get access to it. You know, they go ahead and put it. Or you know, then you've also got some of this information which is sold freely among other, you know, other folks. And I've got to tell you, I tend to look more and more to do business with people who tell me that they don't take this information and sell it. Now, I know a lot of it's just straight demographic information. They don't really particularly care what Jim Britt does, but I fall into a certain demographic group, and they're always trying to keep a handle on what are our likes or dislikes, different preferences, and things of that particular nature. And when you're doing this online, I've been told, there are all these things from whether it's Google or these other people who are recording all this. You know, it isn't a coincidence that if you're researching Chinese restaurants to go eat dinner at tonight, that all of a sudden a national manufacturer of Chinese products suddenly shows up on your computer screen, is it? It doesn't happen by chance.
Sure, and I think at some point somebody thought that was a good business decision. Let's go ahead and use this information. And I think it can come back to haunt that company when people are just irritated by it.
Are we going to see a day, in your estimation, when someone will come back the other way and say, because we start to see it in certain technologies, and that is, we're going to go old school. We're not going to give everybody under the sun all this access to your information. We need some basic things to conduct our business with you. But aside from that, we're going to wrap it up tight. You know, maybe we can't do this or maybe we can't do that, but we're going to kind of go a little bit old school, because I know there are some people now who they have done that. They've started to put things back into writing. They've started to back things up in different formats, you know, with the realization that if it disappears, it's gone. I mean, unless it is right backed up or it is in the cloud or one of these third-party storage situations.
It'll be interesting to see if that does happen, how this younger generation responds to that, you know, when they're so conditioned to using technology, if suddenly it's, you know, disappeared, how that will impact them.
Yeah, I don't know. It would have to be something very serious, you know, a circumstance or situation where they wouldn't have access to the technology, because I've seen that happen before. You know, they talk about all the time when you're talking about emergency preparedness. Everybody's become so reliant on that cell phone that they carry. Well, if you don't have a cell signal, you know, in one of those particular circumstances, it can be a lot more than inconvenient. All of a sudden, your link to the world is gone. And I'm not sure that there are certain people who would know, where do I still get that information? Or how do I get that information, you know, from point A to point B? I've done it before where I've just, you know, put my little text in, hit a button, and it's gone, and you know about it. Well, what happens if we can't communicate that way?
Well, that's a great point.
Yeah. And these are all the challenges that your programs are looking at right now, correct?
Right. You know, we like to teach people how to protect their digital assets, but then, like we talked about earlier, we're also very aware, you know, when something does go wrong, and it's likely that in the life of your business something will go wrong and you will be impacted, you know, how do you respond? And that's really the managerial part of this. You know, how do you get your team together and make quick and effective decisions on how to move the business forward?
And now with the evolution in the last couple of years of the cloud, and these third-party backup programs and a lot of stuff before. I mean, in the early days when we were using these computers, we really were flying by the seat of our pants to a large degree. If you didn't go through, you know, all these different types of backups, I mean, I can remember DAT tapes and, you know, these other things that I can only assume are in some warehouse somewhere, you know, piled to the sky if they haven't been transformed into a digital format or something. We've now gone past that. But we've gotten to the cloud, we've gotten to the third-party storage. Is there something else that's going to come down the pike, or are we going to be right where we are right now? There was an article I read the other day from somebody who said, you know, what if certain elements of this technology, like the smartphone, have kind of reached their zenith? You know, we've packed everything we can pack into a smartphone. And what does that mean now for this particular technology? The cloud, has it taken off to the degree that a lot of these folks invested a lot of money setting it up? Are people utilizing it to that degree? How about some of those?
Well, I think the cloud is such an interesting issue. Now you've entrusted someone else with securing your information. It seems like if there ever is a breach, it could be huge, right? And so it's not one company that's impacted.
Now it's 10.
It's
20.
Yes. And I think that's sort of the next challenge. Who's securing the cloud, and, you know, do we really trust them?
Right. Is most of the really sensitive stuff, and when I talk about sensitive stuff, the government contracts, the things that keep the power grid working, national security and things of that nature, I just can't believe that they could feel comfortable, all right, we'll just ship it up to the cloud or whatever, that they have to, in essence, build their own systems to make sure they're protecting that information. Is that the way that they do it on that scale?
That's what I would believe. I mean, I don't think everyone's sending things up to the cloud. I think there's certain information that has to be stored locally
and protected
backed up locally and protected locally.
When you take a look at the folks who are utilizing your program, and Patty May, who's here with us too, mentioned one thing, and that is when we think about this program being utilized by students, you get some kids down in Texas who now have access to this program because it's available online.
We have one student in particular in Texas. He works for American Airlines Credit Union. So he has the access to, and it's very convenient. He flies into Dulles Airport once every 8 weeks, takes a shuttle over to the Sheraton Reston. We conduct the class. He flies back out. It's not a big deal for him to make that class. We have another student in Texas. She works for the government. She flies in. We have students in Florida. So this program is starting to sort of creep beyond sort of the walls of Reston, Virginia.
And now when it starts to show up in the top 10 of a publication like U.S. News and World Report, is it going to expand even quicker?
Well, I think so. I think we've already received some phone calls, you know, hey, I saw you in the ranking, and they want to know more. Prospects want to know more about that, and they want to talk about that. And people are looking at those rankings. So some people think the rankings mean a lot. Some people don't think they do. It's media. It's out there, and, you know, it was done on a competitive basis, so people notice.
Well, I guarantee you. The other business schools, if not around the country in Virginia, know that now. And with JMU sitting on the top of the heap, let me get one final question from you. You deal with this. You deal with the kids who are in there every day in the trenches. When you look at all this incredible technology, is it exciting or is it scary?
The technology for the delivery of the courses? Well,
and all this technology that we've been talking about.
I'm an operations management guy, so security is not my field, and I should have probably told you that when we started this interview. But, yeah, it's a lot to think about, and to think about, it's such a rapidly moving field. And fortunately, we have great faculty who are looking at, you know, where's the next area we should really invest some time in the classroom.
Very good. We appreciate your time, and thanks for stopping by today. And again, congratulations to you and all the folks at the College of Business.
Thank you.
Thanks. WSVA time is now 10:58. Coming up here on News Radio 550, we've got news from ABC, and also we've got the Gallagher Show right here on News Radio 550.